The Heal Podcast has been created to explore my favorite ingredients for a long-term, sustainable, healthy human experience. We take an informed look into topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanding consciousness. Heal stands for healthy eating and living. So why not sit back, relax, be present, and enjoy the conversations about this unique gift we were all given called life. If you feel this podcast has resonated with you, please feel free to share it with your friends, family, and colleagues, as the gift of knowledge is something wondrous. Thank you for your open hearts and minds. Alrighty, let's get into some delicious healing. If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows, and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com. Dr. Jolene Brighton, NMD, is one of the leading experts in women's medicine and is a pioneer in her exploration of the far-reaching impact of hormonal birth control and the little-known side effects that impact health in a large way. In her best-selling book, Beyond the Pill, she shares her clinical protocols aimed at supporting women struggling with symptoms of hormonal imbalance, including post-birth control pill syndrome and birth control-related side effects. A trained nutritional biochemist and naturopathic physician, Dr. Brighton is the founder and clinic director at Rubus Health, an integrative women's medicine clinic. She is a member of the MindBody Green Collective and has been featured in prominent media outlets such as Forbes, Cosmopolitan, ABC News, and the New York Post. To find out more about Dr. Brighton, please visit her website, drbrighton.com. That's drbrighton.com. Jolene, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's a sunny day in Portland, Oregon. How is it for you?
It is a very sunny day here in the far northern rivers of New South Wales. I'm really looking forward to this podcast. So let's just start off. You are a nutritional biochemist and also a naturopathic physician. Tell us about what those two things are and why you chose to go down those paths.
I think the short of it is I'm a big nerd. So a nutritional biochemist, my focus is, so I understand I have the baseline of clinical nutrition, but also married that with chemistry and the biochemistry of the body to understand how nutrients interact with your genetics, your molecular pathways, and how that impacts the expression of health or the expression of disease. And as a naturopathic physician, you know, what actually propelled me to become a naturopathic physician is that I had this, you know, very comprehensive science background. So I had a degree in chemistry, then nutritional biochemistry, and I was actually on track to get my PhD. I was going to be a researcher. And it was something that it really occurred to me that what I was lacking was a philosophy and a wisdom that respected the body and looked at the body's ability to heal and really through the lens of, with curiosity of when disease develops or symptoms develop, like what may have went wrong in the organism. Now, there's a time and a place for conventional medicine, which is why I love naturopathic medicine, is because it really brings together everything that the conventional world can offer us, whether we are referring or we are prescribing a medication ourselves, and also this root cause philosophy and curiosity to ask, well, how did we arrive here? And what things can we change within diet and lifestyle arena that maybe we can marry with the medication, or we can help bring you off the medication?
I guess the theme of the podcast over the last year or so is really getting on these guests that really want to, I guess, tackle. And maybe tackle isn't the right word, because that seems a little bit more like you're battling with someone, but actually just exploring the idea that there actually is a reason for all of our, I guess, imbalances. And that, I guess, is what attracted me to your work. You really go deep about imbalance, especially with hormones, especially with how our bodies work. And you've written a wonderful book called Beyond the Pill. Let's just start off with the instigator and what was your catalyst for wanting to share a book about hormonal imbalance and what the pill can do?
Well, the quite funny part about this journey is that after spending 2 years in clinical rotations in a homeless youth clinic where I dispensed a lot of birth control, so mind you that these are women who, one, are impacted by period poverty at a much greater rate than the average woman, so they have to choose between eating or having a tampon. So having access to a medication that puts their period on hiatus for 3 months or more is something that, you know, is really in some capacities a gift for them, and that they're very happy to have access to. And the other issue is that these women don't have doors at night that they can lock. So their risk of sexual assault is quite high, and getting pregnant, as you can imagine, when you have food scarcity and you're living on the street, that's really not on the agenda. And so I spent about 2 years in those rotations and prescribing a lot of birth control. And when I started my own private practice, I actually said, I'm done. I'm not going to talk about birth control anymore. I'm like so over it. And yet, how do you have a women's health practice and you don't talk about birth control? And, you know, I just came to observe that many, if not all of women, struggled to come off of birth control. And when they broke up with it, they were having issues with anxiety or new onset neurological issues like migraines, brain fog. Maybe they were having gastrointestinal issues, or they were breaking out with acne for the first time in their life, or they've lost their period or their periods have become very irregular. I myself spent 10 years on hormonal birth control. And becoming a first-generation college student and having access to birth control and having also worked with women in that are at high risk for sexual assault and period poverty, you know, has really influenced me that I can never take the stance of being anti-birth control. It's been absolutely a gift. And yet there's so much that we don't know, that we haven't been told about it, and that we've also been told not to talk about it. Like, we should just take the pill and say thank you and, you know, go on our way. And that it's almost too taboo to even question birth control. I actually get people who say, well, you must be anti-woman because you question birth control. And I'm like, not allowing women to share their stories and to question medical interventions, that's actually anti-woman. And it's anti-science to ever brush off the curiosity or act like you've proven something and we conquered it and we never need to discuss it again. So really, the book was born out of my clinical experience with birth control, having had many side effects on it, coming off of it, developing post-birth control syndrome, and then getting the reputation in my private practice as being the doctor who believed women's birth control stories, which I still kind of laugh about that. It's still a trip to think that women called my office and said, I want to make an appointment with Dr. Brighton. I heard she believes women's birth control stories. And as I got into conversations with each one of my patients, it became so clear that the experiences that I had, even as a physician patient going and seeing my doctor, were the same experiences women were having. Being told symptoms were in their head, the side effects were not real. There was no research to support your story. Therefore, you're making it up. And like, if you are having side effects, we have another medication for that. And if you come off birth control, you're a crazy person and we'll see you back when you're pregnant. And it's these kinds of stories that are so very pervasive in medicine. And they are, in fact, just stories. So I wrote Beyond the Pill when I recognized that through the research, that more than half of women were using hormonal birth control for symptom management. And it's called Beyond the Pill because I want to give women a root cause solution to their hormonal symptoms beyond just birth control. I know they can go to their doctor any day, every day, and get birth control. But what if we could teach you about your body? What if you could understand your body and work with it naturally? And what if you do choose to use birth control? How can we support you while you're on it and let you know there's life beyond the pill, the patch, the ring, the IUD, you know, whatever that contraceptive is, that you can come off of birth control and you can be a whole woman feeling vibrant and alive in your body?
There's so many different directions I want to go in after all what you just said. I've heard so many stories about the pill causing these issues throughout different health channels, whether it be the side effects of having statins or other pharmaceuticals. I've heard so many stories from mothers who have told me about their children after they've been vaccinated. And again, these are stories, but they're very persuasive and pervasive. The idea that we put our trust into these modern medicine breakthroughs, but then if there is a negative story that comes from it, people are considered crazy and they've got it's all in their head and so on, as you said. And I don't want to dwell on that too much, but one thing you said then was half of the women are using the contraceptive pill for system management, I think was exactly what you said. So that's a really interesting thing for me to hear. So can you explain what that means?
Yeah. Well, I do want to, you know, just address the point of like, you're right that, you know, in medicine, it tends to be at the clinical level that when somebody experiences something that is an outlier from the research publications, they're often dismissed. And in fact, that's an opportunity to get curious, to ask questions, to refine what we're doing and advance our medicine that we do have to offer. We can celebrate these medical advancements and still question, is this the best solution for me? And at the same time, we can also recognize that at the research level, we expect there to be outliers. So when a medication is introduced into the population, it seems to be there's this loss of translation that happens where doctors are like, you either are black or you're white. Like there is this response or there's not. And in reality, there's a lot of people that will fall into the in-between, the gray, that won't have that response. And researchers recognize this. It's well accepted. And yet something happens at the clinical level that when you're not cleanly fitting into the algorithm, then what we do is we just say, it must not be real. Your experience isn't real. And this is getting called out. We're seeing major medical institutions within the United States recognizing medical gender bias. That is, women's pain is dismissed at a higher rate. We're less likely to receive adequate treatment. And so as this lends to your question with symptom management, you may be past the pill because you have heavy, painful periods. And so your doctor says, we can shut that down. That's how birth control works. So pretty much all forms of contraceptive, except for, you know, some of the progestin-based only, may not shut down ovulation, but it actually works by at the brain level. So I think this one blew my mind when I'd been on the pill for 10 years. And then I suddenly get the information because I'm sitting in naturopathic medical school that the pill works by stopping my brain from firing hormones that communicate to my ovaries. Here I thought I was taking a medication that only impacted my reproductive system when in fact it was impacting me at the brain level. So women may be having painful periods. They're given hormonal birth control. Yes, it can shut down their periods, but what may very well be going on is endometriosis. And this is a problem because when we pass a woman birth control with no discussion as to why she has these symptoms, we're doing her a great disservice because that woman who has painful periods and maybe she gets some relief with birth control may find herself infertile in the future because her endometriosis went undiagnosed and the birth control can mask symptoms and delay diagnosis. The same is true with irregular periods, which can be due to hypothyroidism or polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS as it's called. We see the same with acne. Women experiencing cystic acne, being given hormonal birth control, and then she finds out decades later, she actually has a cardiometabolic inflammatory disorder, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, that has put her at higher risk for diabetes, heart disease, infertility, and other issues, and no one discussed it with her because they thought they just basically took care of those symptoms and they sent her on her way. And so I'm an advocate that if you want to use the pill or any form of hormonal contraceptive for whatever reason, that's 100% your right, whether it's for pregnancy prevention or symptom management. But you also need to have informed consent, the full story before you're given that prescription. And your doctor needs to review, like I do in chapter 8 of my book, of like, here's the big scary things that can happen with birth control and when you need to go see your doctor, which is very important. That so many of us start birth control, we don't actually know, when is it time to go to my doctor? And you know, you brought up something about like being crazy, which is when women who started hormonal birth control, I mean, since birth control stepped onto the scene, women have complained of mood side effects. In fact, it's cited as the number one reason women leave the clinical trials. It is in the package insert. And yet on the clinical level, women are highly dismissed. And yet in 2016, we saw a giant study of over 1 million women come out showing there is a correlation between birth control and depression, something that women have been reporting and being dismissed for forever. And then when that study came out, people lined up to dismiss women and say, well, it wasn't the right kind of study. And, oh, you know, it's not causation, it's correlation. Sure, it's correlation. But it's also a study that for the first time in history validated what generations of women had said. And this is where we really have to call for more curiosity and humility in medicine.
Mm. Okay. I want to take a step back into history. I have two daughters. They're 13 and 14 at the moment.
Oh, you're just in that sweet spot, eh?
Yeah. I'm loving it. I'm loving the whole adventure. And a lot of these podcasts I actually make not only for myself, but for my family, for my mom, for my kids, for my wife, and whoever listens to them to learn from the experts. What is the pill and what is it used for and why do people take it and what is it made of? Can you share that information for us and how long has it been around for?
Yeah. So hormonal birth control really got introduced. It really stepped onto the scene in the late 50s. It became more widely available in the 60s, but you had to be married to be able to get the prescription, which is kind of a trip. You know, what's really interesting is that it wasn't until it really gained traction and became widely available that the first wave of feminism regarding the pill actually pushed back on it. Because women, the dose of estrogen was so high and the progestins that were in it were so problematic. And we've seen this with iterations of birth control for some women, but that women died from taking hormonal birth control. And so it has been improved upon. But what you'll find in hormonal birth control is not the same thing that you make in your body. And there's a lot of misinformation around this, even by experts and, you know, great clinicians who will say, oh, well, what's in the pill or any of these contraceptives is the exact same thing that you make in your body. But that's actually not true. And this is where me coming from a chemistry background can actually look at these molecules and say, well, they don't look anything alike. Like this is what the body makes. And then this is what this molecule looks like. And so there's a synthetic form of estrogen, ethanol, estradiol. And there's also a synthetic form of progesterone, which is called progestin. And I think the progestin one is where people get the most confused because you'll see researchers and even doctors saying, oh, the progesterone and the progesterone. And in fact, what they're talking about is progestin. And why this is important is that some progestins are actually androgen derived. So they actually come from what gets called a male sex hormone, but women have these as well. And these progestins, so for a very long time, and you may have heard this as well, like this estrogen, this synthetic estrogen is the troublemaker, and synthetic estrogen, cancer and clots and depression and all these things. And as the research has evolved and more has come out, we've actually come to find that the progestins are actually a really big problem. And in fact, when we look at the mental health component, so as you have teenage women living in your house, we saw these studies coming out that, okay, if you take a combination pill, so that's what I was talking about with the estrogen and the progestin, you're about 23% more likely to be prescribed an antidepressant, which at first made everybody go, okay, yeah, that estrogen's a troublemaker. Except that when they looked at the progestin-only pill, so there's progestin-only pills, we typically prescribe these for women who are at higher risk for a clot or cardiovascular risk, which is commonly postpartum. We also see the progestin-only in the depot shot, the IUDs like Mirena, Skyla, Kylena. And what we found with progestin-only pills is there was 34% more women who took them were 34% more likely to be prescribed an antidepressant. And as we looked at teens, this is where it got really startling. I have a son, so it startled me. Imagine, so what I'm about to lay down, if you have a daughter, you might want to just take a seat and take a breath, is that teens who take the progestin-only pill saw a twofold increase in their risk of depression. And yet young women who use hormonal contraceptives, and this is across the board with hormonal contraceptives, they have three times the risk of suicide. And it's not just the pill, you know, the patch and the NuvaRings, these don't fare well either. And so it's a really important thing that we don't dismiss this research or these experiences, because, you know, for you, and I'm not sure how it works where you live, but within the United States, your daughters could go and get a prescription for birth control and you could never know about it. Now, I certainly can see that there is a need for that in society, and I wouldn't advocate against it. However, if you don't know this about your daughter and suddenly she's not getting out of bed, she's not hanging out with her friends, her grades are tanking, she's super unmotivated, you know, you might not know what's going on. And it may very well be that she started a contraceptive of some kind, some hormonal contraceptive. And so this is why I really want to educate people that, like, if you are a young woman starting birth control and you can't tell your parents about it, tell your best friend about it. Tell your best friend, if I stop picking up my phone or I stop returning your texts, if you see me posting weird things on social media, if I'm not showing up to class, if you see these behavioral changes, will you please make sure that I get to my doctor and I have a conversation? Especially because we know that the suicide risk peaks around 2 months after beginning hormonal birth control. That this is one way that we can educate young women. They can advocate for themselves, but they can also have advocates that surround them so that we can stay safe on this. We don't have to vilify this medication or, you know, or say like no woman should ever take it. That's just not realistic. I think we need to simultaneously have access while we also have education, and education happening at the individual level.
I love it. I'm loving talking to you. You're so wise and so knowledgeable and so balanced. Is this the big issue? Is this the underlying cause of these side effects? Is it because we get our bodies and our hormones out of balance by ingesting something that causes an imbalance?
You know, what we've come to understand in the research and why we're seeing so many researchers calling for more is because there is just so much that we haven't even begun to ask about birth control or investigate. There was actually Dr. Kissling in Scientific American this year in 2019. She made a statement about how basically using birth control to suppress our periods for long periods of time. So menstrual suppression via this medication is the biggest uncontrolled medical experiment that we've ever had, because we don't know. We don't know what happens when we start a woman on birth control the day that she starts her period, or a few months, or, you know, within that year, and then she continues it through menopause. And then we're seeing women who are using it that way now. What we do understand is that just like your natural hormones, hormonal birth control impacts every single system in your body. Now, there is a convenient narrative, but it is a myth in medicine, that hormonal birth control only impacts your reproductive system. But like I said at the beginning of this interview, it does that by how it impacts your brain. And we know that the effect on the brains, we see structural changes while you're on birth control. We see that your stress response is altered while you're on birth control. So your cortisol levels may stay elevated, which is not a good thing for the brain, not a good thing for anyone's health. So this is an important discussion that we need to have at the individualized level. We also know that while you're on birth control, it depletes nutrients. So like magnesium, zinc, selenium, B vitamins like folate and B12, and antioxidants like vitamin C and CoQ10. And that while you're on it, you actually make neurotoxins in your brain through the alterations of the tryptophan pathway. Not to mention, they've done studies where they measure a woman's blood, specifically her C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation. She starts birth control and they find that it is inflammatory. Her C-reactive protein is now elevated. So we've got inflammation, nutrient depletions. It also impacts the microbiome. So alterations in the microbiome, but not just in your gut. We also see it in the mouth and the vaginal flora as well. So before we started talking, I was talking about how I interviewed Dr. Lynn who is a holistic dentist. And this is a conversation we were having, how our hormones infect, they actually impact our oral flora and how birth control can impact that as well. So gum disease and cavities, like these things may be related. And we understand that birth control can alter your liver's function at the genetic level. It drops your testosterone, which can be a good thing if you've got testosterone-driven acne, but a bad thing when your libido goes missing. You can also see, you know, there's vaginal dryness, pain with sex, which, you know, some people might be like, well, that's not really that big of a deal. Well, that has a psychological impact on a woman, but also on her partner. And then there's the interesting point that hormonal birth control actually may alter our mate selection. And so there's a lot of ways that it's impacting us.
Tell me about that. It can alter mate selection, because that sounds, you know, I don't want to just sweep that under the carpet, because that seems pretty interesting.
It is really interesting. And this is, again, why I am very much like, we need, no conversation can be off the table. Like, we need to be able to freely discuss these things, all of these issues, so that we can have a better understanding, we can educate women better, and we can advance medicine. And I think everybody wants to see those things improve. So there's a section in my book that I say it's called The Pill and Your Bad Boyfriend. And I'm not saying that like the pill is solely why you chose the guy you did, but it does have an influence. So in one capacity that it does this is that it alters mate selection via our perception of the MHC complex. So this is the major histocompatibility complex, which is a set of genes that has a really large role in immune system function. So we've all heard about pheromones. So when your man comes back from the gym and he's all sweaty and you're like, I'm very attracted to you right now, this is like him putting off his MHC complex to you. I know it doesn't sound as sexy when I say it all scientifically, but in that, what you should be detecting. So what they found is that women who are off of hormonal birth control, so non-pill users, select for mates that are more genetically different than them. So this, in theory, allows baby to have a more robust set of genes, more robust immune system, so more viable offspring. Yet when women are on birth control, they select for mates more similar to themselves, which is like selecting genetically more for your cousin than someone who isn't within your family, which is like usually when women go, ew. And I know, because I was on the pill and I picked some bad boyfriends in that time as well. But the other interesting part is that they've done studies where they bring women into a room, they give them a computer and they say, hey, here's all these faces, men and women's faces. Go ahead and alter these faces so that they're more attractive to you. What they found is that these non-pill using women would change men's faces to be more masculine. So this is where I say it's like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. So anybody with children, when he jumps into that song about how he's so manly and he's got that strong jaw and his big chest, yes, that's actually very masculine features. Mm-hmm. And yet they took this same set of women, they put them on birth control, and they had them come back 3 months later. And what they found was astounding. They didn't change the women's faces, but the men's faces, they actually made them more feminine. So they made that jawline more narrow. They actually altered men's faces to be more feminine. And so while we are not on birth control, we're not on it, we select for men who are more genetically different than us, more masculine features, which is presumably like the defenders in the environment who would keep us safe if we were going to become pregnant. But when we get on it, we're selecting for men more genetically similar to us who have more feminine features, which may be more about feeling safe and like feeling near family, because maybe on an evolutionary spectrum, this is like a pseudo pregnancy. Although these hormones are nothing like what you get in pregnancy. So I'm always very, very careful in saying that. And in addition, while we're on birth control, we actually select like what is most important to us is how smart is he and how much money does he make? Which is when men are like, oh, those gold diggers. Well, no. That's just modern evolution of how do you select for the mate that's gonna protect you and that you guys can work together and survive in this environment. And so what's interesting is to see the research that says, well, what happens when women come off? Well, women who come off of birth control, if you selected your mate while you were on it, you may be reporting less sexual satisfaction, less satisfaction in your relationship, and you may very well be at a higher risk of getting divorced because now that you're off of it, those masculine features are much more important to you. They weren't before, but now that you're off, the way your partner looks and how they smell, that's much more important to you. Now, does that mean everyone's going to get a divorce and no one should use birth control? No, but we should be aware of this because if you know, I selected my mate while I was on birth control, I'm going to come off. It may be a good time for us to start some relationship counseling because I will be, and this is what's startling, you will be a different person as you come off of birth control. Hmm. Not an abrupt personality change, but as the primal animal that you are, and I hate to break it to you, we are all animals. We want to think we're so smart and so evolved, but no, we are really animals. There will be some changes. So if we know this, what can we do preventively speaking? We could get into relationship counseling. We can have open dialogues with our partner and we can get more in tune with who we are and, you know, what our needs are and find a way to communicate that in a productive way. And so I think that, you know, there's people who will say like, we should never share any of this information with women because women wouldn't take birth control or they'll be scared off of it. And I'm like, okay, listen, the unknown for most people is way scarier than the known. And in addition, that is saying that women are too stupid to make informed decisions. That's incredibly disrespectful. And whose right is it to choose? Like, where do we draw the line? Who gets to choose what information women receive about a medical intervention and what they don't get to receive? I don't think that's very fair for any doctor or scientist to be able to choose that for an individual.
A couple of things that I want to discuss with you here after what you've said. So by taking the pill, you basically stop your period. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, it should because we don't want to get pregnant. So that's how it works, is that it stops ovulation. And so if you're on hormonal birth control of any kind that stops your ovulation, and then the only way you get a period is when you stop it, that's a withdrawal bleed. It's a medication-induced withdrawal bleed.
So here's an interesting thing, and I'm not sure where you stand on this or your understanding of this, and I could be going off on a completely strange tangent here, but I've heard a lot of young women that adopt a vegan or plant-based diet very full-on. That happens to them. They stop having their period. Now, these are just stories that I've heard, and I'm not trying to divide anyone here, but why would that happen? And are these just anecdotal stories, or is there something going on in the body that is messing with the hormones?
Oh, yeah, certainly. So when we understand that the way that we optimize our fertility and our reproductive health, that our reproductive health is incredibly energy expensive. It's very expensive to be reproductively healthy and ovulating every single month. And so if at any point your environment is signaling to your body that it's unsafe, we can lose our period. So that could be because you're not getting enough calories and enough nutrients. It can be because of stress, and it can be a myriad of reasons. But essentially, if you are in a caloric deficit, you are signaling to your body, the environment is not safe for reproduction. Like, it would be a really terrible idea if you barely have enough food to feed yourself to then get pregnant, because your body being wise is like, well, we might not be able to actually sustain this baby's life, and it could cost us our life. So now is not a good time. So that is a beautiful evolutionary mechanism that our modern society is an evolutionary mismatch, can be signaling that can lead to hormone imbalances. So to your point of adopting like a vegan or vegetarian diet, those dietary changes that can shift our hormones and lead to amenorrhea, that's loss of menstruation, that's actually one of the top causes. So over-exercising, undernourished, is one of the top causes for functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. Basically, your brain says, shut it down. It's not safe to have a baby. And I have heard women argue, well, our ancestors spent most of the time pregnant or breastfeeding and didn't have as many periods, so this is okay. Let's not forget what the state of pregnancy is. Like, what are your hormone state? It's very, very different than having amenorrhea because you're not fueling yourself or your body is really stressed out. And in that, we'll see, you know, these, I think ballerinas and gymnasts are prime examples of young women who delay or don't, they lose their period because of their training. And it's what was once called the female athlete triad of like overtraining and not meeting your caloric needs based on what your energy output is. And we see stress fractures in these populations. So young women who are fracturing like their heel bone and their bones are actually becoming weaker in a period of time, you really should be banking and building your bone mass. And so, you know, not having our natural hormones does have a negative effect on our bone health, our brain health, our heart health. And we can look at it. So if you're 14, and believe me, at 14, I'd be super happy if my period had just disappeared. I'd be like, yes, winning. Except that you can look at what's happening to like maybe the 60-year-old woman who's no longer getting hormones and what's happening with the changes in her body. It's not just because she's aging. It's because she no longer has these hormones. So her risk of cardiovascular disease is increasing. Her risk of dementia is increasing. Her osteoporosis, it may be ramping up. And to understand, the osteoporosis that presents in a 60-year-old was actually evolving as we were teenagers and into our 30s and as we aged. And so a lot of times, and you've got teenagers now, so I'm sure you're in the thick of this. Like, we think as teenagers, we're invincible and like we can do whatever, we're untouchable. And yet everything that we are doing in those early years is what's really manifesting in those geriatric years.
Okay. First, I want to get to the start of our journey in life, which is our offspring, the next generation. How can taking the pill affect the coming generation? Through my studies, I know that diet can have a huge, huge, huge impact on the coming generations based on the mum's microbiome, even the father's microbiome and the genetic download that we do when we create the next generation. So, as far as being on the pill and then coming off the pill to get pregnant, is there a period of time that we should allow for the body to rebalance itself before people go to reproduce?
Yeah, definitely. So this is really important for everyone to understand, whether or not you've ever been on hormonal birth control, is that the egg that you become pregnant with really went through a 90-day maturation process. So at least 30 days of getting that egg ready and as healthy as possible. So when you understand that, then you understand that you need to spend at least 3 months, if not, I mean, really, we say at least 6 months, if not longer, preparing your body for pregnancy. And that's just any woman. Men, your sperm goes through a 72-day maturation period. So to get to the healthiest sperm, it's a shorter amount of time, but you would do well just to join, you know, your partner in terms of changing your diet and improving all these things because, you know, like you were saying, diet has a tremendous impact on our health overall. And also on our reproductive health. And so with that, what we've come to understand with hormonal birth control, and I detail this in the fertility chapter of my book, is that yes, it depletes nutrients, key nutrients we need for conception. So every woman, I think, is familiar with folate because we hear all the time how important folate is in preventing neural tube defects. Well, if you're on hormonal birth control, which by the way, like, the pill is, you know, not always 99% effective. With typical use, it can be much lower. So we can see as high as 9 out of 100 women using the pill in a year will get pregnant. So it's important to know this because if you're on hormonal birth control and it's depleting your folate, your B12, your CoQ10, then you're going to need to be on a supplement like a prenatal or multivitamin to replenish those and to protect you in case you do get pregnant. Presumably you're using birth control for pregnancy prevention. So that means you're sexually active. And so we need to be on that. And we also need to be on that before conception so that we have the healthiest egg. Mom is both the seed and the soil. So, you know, we are not only going to get pregnant, but we are going to grow that human in our body. We need to have the healthiest body for that. And as you were saying, you know, our microbiome, mama's microbiome becomes baby's microbiome. And hormonal birth control, the pill specifically, it disrupts your microbiome. It can lead to dysbiosis. We know if you have a family history of Crohn's disease, then 5 years or more on the pill, and you're at a 300% increased risk of developing that autoimmune condition. That's how much it can impact gut health. So certainly we need to take care of gut health. And, you know, there was a small study that came out in 2018, and I don't want any woman to feel guilty or feel shamed or blame herself with what I'm going to say next, but it's good data to have. And what this study said is that women who get pregnant within 6 months of coming off of birth control have babies who are at higher risk of childhood cancer. Now, that does that mean that just because you got pregnant, like immediately off the pill, your baby's going to have cancer? No. But this was really good information to have coming out because we hadn't asked that question yet. We get told as women, don't worry, the birth control won't mess with your fertility. So as soon as you come off of it, you'll be able to get pregnant right away. But should we? Is that really the best idea? And that's like, you know, that statement's made so that women aren't afraid of being on birth control and so they feel like, you know, very empowered in taking it. Yet we also need to have the nuanced discussion of, okay, but it's also doing these things in your body and we should definitely investigate that. And if you are a woman who, you know, started birth control for symptoms and you know you want to have a baby in the future, now is the time to start investigating what might be going on. If you have polycystic ovarian syndrome, you have thyroid disease, you have endometriosis, you have any of these conditions, it may be more difficult for you to get pregnant. So waiting until you're 38 and then coming off of birth control may not be the best idea given your individualized factors. And that's something that warrants a discussion with your doctor.
Quick question before I want to jump into thyroid, is how many people are on the pill and what is this business worth?
You know, I've actually never looked into what this business is worth. This is the first time I've ever been asked that. I'm sure it's worth a lot. So, and I say that because within the US, it's about 11 million women. We see 100 million women worldwide. We know a good percentage of women have used hormonal birth control at some point in their life. And in that, it was really, I go through this and what happened with Yaz and the other Yasmin, Osella, when that was brought onto market. And what happened in all of that, and I explain this in chapter 8, is that it was one of the first times that we saw the positioning change. So when we understand that hormonal birth control was only developed with a healthy woman in mind, a woman who had no pre-existing conditions to delay and space pregnancy. Not to be on it indefinitely, but and this was a celebration. I mean, from a business perspective, it was the first time a pharmaceutical company was actually able to market a medication that didn't require a diagnosis. Like, just by way of being an ovulating, menstruating female, you qualified for this medication. So, woohoo, 50% of the population right there is part of the market. And then it evolved and it went further. And it's what I call the pill for every female ill. Where that what we see now is that in this really started more like in the 90s, where the marketing ramped up to be like, hey, you can use this pill for PMS. And it was marketed in this way. The company that was doing that actually got in trouble because there was never a study to show that it actually helped PMS. PMDD was a different story, but in that, I mean, I remember seeing these commercials of these women being like, woo, I'm on birth control. All of my symptoms are gone. And so that's where we really saw the expansion of birth control going beyond just, okay, this is for pregnancy prevention, to if you've got a lady part problem, there's a pill for that. If it's something hormonally related, we have a pill for that. And we can be grateful that we have this and also be questioning, is this really the right medical intervention for me? But it's funny. I'm like, you would think that I, talking all about this, would know the answer of how much is this industry worth? And I don't really actually know that.
next book.
Yeah. Well, those, and I'm sure those books exist. I mean, that was part of why I wrote the book, you know, and it includes everything that it does, is because there were a lot of great women's health books out there talking about our hormones, talking about liver, talking about thyroid, talking about gut, but not one that really brought it all together and also included a very important part of almost every woman's history, which is birth control. And then there were the books that were like, here's how birth control is the devil. Here's the marketing that went into birth control. Here's like what birth control, you know, has done in terms of women's health and the revolution. And so I really tried to tie a lot of that together without doing the, you know, the political pharmaceutical that there's lots of books out there with that. So I'm sure we could just do a Google search and be like, what is this industry worth?
You touched on thyroid before, and we seem to see that across the board, it's becoming a huge, huge problem, especially for women. Some people have linked it to the fluoride in the water system, in tap water. They've linked it to so many different things that are in the environment, whether it's glyphosate and whatnot. So how does the pill react with our thyroid, and why is it such a big deal?
Yeah, well, there's an entire chapter in my book dedicated to thyroid and adrenal health, because it's really interesting when you get into the research and you start to put together, I put together, you know, all the ways that hormonal birth control can really impact your thyroid. This one hits close to home because I actually have Hashimoto's and I have hypothyroidism. And by the time it was caught, my thyroid had undergone enough destruction that I require a daily medication, which is why whenever people are like, oh, that Dr. Brighton, she's just anti-pharmaceuticals. I'm like, except for the ones I take every single day, I guess there's that. I'm like really grateful to have access. I mean, how blessed and fortunate am I that I live in the society we do where I do have access to this medication. Like, that's fantastic. So when it comes to hormonal birth control, it's really interesting in terms of the impact on thyroid health. So first and foremost, the number one cause of hypothyroidism and hyperthyroidism is autoimmunity. And autoimmunity, as we understand it through Dr. Fasano's work, really develops when we have a trigger in our environment, which hormones are a trigger for women. Having a baby, getting pregnant, having a miscarriage, getting your period, losing your period, going through menopause, perimenopause, and hormonal birth control as well can all be triggering events. Now, we also understand that autoimmunity develops through intestinal hyperpermeability, also known as leaky gut, and hormonal birth control induces leaky gut. And so what is the last factor that comes into play? Your genetics. Are you predisposed? So the autoimmune disease that manifests, if everything lines up and things are right, really depends on your genetics. So, you know, if you have a family history of thyroid disease, that may very well be that being on hormonal birth control could put you at higher risk. We do know, so we don't have evidence that birth control is linked to Hashimoto's. We do have evidence it's linked to inflammatory bowel disease. So for example, Crohn's disease, for multiple sclerosis, interstitial cystitis, also known as painful bladder. So we do know it's linked with other autoimmune conditions. And so this is why I think that we need to have more curiosity. And if a patient starts hormonal birth control, we should get baseline testing and see where her thyroid's at. And does she have antibodies when, you know, before she begins it? So if something happens afterwards, we know what was her normal before she had this medical intervention. Now, in addition, hormonal birth control, as I said, it causes nutrient deficiencies, the same nutrients that your thyroid needs in order to produce thyroid hormone. So once we produce thyroid hormone, which the thyroid gland is a little butterfly-shaped gland that sits at the front of your neck, and it responds to TSH, so thyroid-stimulating hormone from the pituitary, tells the thyroid to make thyroid hormone. It mostly makes inactive thyroid hormone, T4, which then has to be converted to active thyroid hormone. So this is your mood, your metabolism, your menses, part of how you poop every day, very important thing. And in that, you have to make that conversion in some, you make it in, you know, every system of your body, but primarily in your gut and your liver, which take a hit while you're on hormonal birth control. As I already said, it causes intestinal hyperpermeability. So that's one thing we have to be mindful of. And once you do convert it, you require certain nutrients to be able to dock it onto the receptor and bring it into your cell, the same nutrients that birth control is depleting. And in addition, whenever we have inflammation and we are in an inflammatory state, our cells can become rigid and it's harder to actually get the hormones to dock and we can become resistant. Most people understand this from a perspective of insulin resistance leading to diabetes, but we can be resistant to any hormone, and thyroid hormone is one of those as well. Now, there's one more layer to this that I share in my book, and that is while you're on hormonal birth control, we see elevation in binding proteins, sex hormone binding globulin, cortisol binding globulin, and thyroid binding globulin. Now, why would your body increase these proteins? Well, if you consider that the pill specifically is a high enough dose of hormones that when you take it, your liver tries to detox it out, but it's still high enough to shut down your brain from talking to your ovaries, then you can see, well, that's a whole lot of hormones for the body to deal with. And your body being wise actually begins producing more sex hormone binding globulin to keep you safe. So in the research studies, they've said that the pill induces a genetic alteration of the expression of sex hormone binding globulin by the liver. So at the genetic level, the pill is altering your liver function. And in that, you know, I've had some people push back and say, well, there was this research study that said that your thyroid hormone was actually higher, that the pill might actually help your thyroid hormone. What they measured in that study was total thyroid hormone. You can't use that. You can only use free thyroid hormone. And why was total elevated? Because the thyroid binding globulin was elevated. The next thing people will say is, well, no, I mean, if that was a problem, we would have seen this by now. We would know more about it. Like, this isn't a real thing. Except that, how do the researchers validate that that woman is in fact using birth control? Because believe it or not, women will lie in the trials when they start having side effects and they're like, okay, I'm just going to say I'm on it. But there's no way I'm taking it because they feel awful. Well, they measure these binding proteins. And if you are not taking birth control, then those binding proteins should come down. And if you are on it, they should be elevated. And that's how researchers can tell whether or not you're actually being compliant with the protocol.
Fuck.
I just went like fire hydrant style on thyroid there. That was like seriously a lot of time spent in my office reading all of these studies. And, you know, I've actually had a lot of gynecologists and endocrinologists reach out to me and say, like, this is the first time I've ever read like all of this put together, all of these studies put together and so detailed on thyroid health. And it is changing how they're practicing, which is, you know, that's the thing. When we learn better, we do better as doctors and as people in general. And it can feel a little bit like that where you're like, oh my God, what did you just say? And what did I do to my body? And the good news is your body's pretty resilient. Your body wants to heal. And when you know these things, you test for them, you start to identify what's going on, you can create change. You can improve your health. It's not a lost cause.
So two things. I mean, you mentioned Alessio Fasano, who's a brilliant scientist. He was in Australia a couple of years ago with Dr. David Perlmutter, and I had the good grace, my wife and I, to cook them both dinner. We had roast chicken, some chicken broth.
Oh my God, lucky all around.
Yeah. And, you know, his discovery about zonulin and how gluten affects that and our gut-brain barrier. I mean, what you're saying is very, very similar to it, but it's not the gluten doing it. It's the hormone from this pill that's going in and affecting our liver, which is affecting our thyroid. Now, you mentioned something about nutrients. I want to get to the solutions, and no doubt diet will be part of this and lifestyle choices. But before we go there, I've neglected a certain part of our audience at the moment, and you mentioned menopause before and onwards. So explain to me, and again, my daughters that are going to go through this journey of life as females, explain what's going to happen from the time that they get their period through to the time when that will stop. And why does that happen? And then what are the next steps? And then we can talk about solutions to people that are on the pill.
Right. So, I mean, the sad reality is that we're not designed to live forever, and that there is this, you know, finite window of being a reproductive cyclical female. So, you know, menarche is the onset of menstruation. In my book, I have a chapter called The Lowdown on Your Hormones, where I take you through what are your hormones? How are they made? How do they work? What do you experience when they are balanced? Because they are designed to give you superpowers. And then what do you experience when they're out of balance? Like, instead of repeating this narrative of like, being a woman is just inherently awful and periods are a punishment and like, it's just like, good luck, your hormones are your body's way of just messing with you. In reality, is that your hormones are meant to give you superpowers. And when there are symptoms, it's actually your body's way of saying, hey, I need some support. We're in this together. Can you help me heal? And so I really teach women to come at their body with curiosity and to be able, there's a whole chapter that I call it the period decoder ring of chapter 4 of my book, which is basically like, if you have this period problem, this is what might be the cause that you should talk to your doctor about. Here's the lab testing that you should have done and discuss with your doctor. And will you wait for that appointment? Or you wait for those lab results to come in, here's what you can be doing in regards to diet and lifestyle, which is your personal responsibility in your health. At no point am I saying, go it alone without a doctor, or put all the trust in your doctor. And like, because the reality is that healing doesn't happen in a doctor's office. That's very rare. Healing actually happens with the choices that we make. And the choices that you make today influence your outcomes decades from now. So with your daughters, you know, they're cycling. They've got, you know, times when their estrogen's spiking, they're ovulating, their progesterone's flowing. And when, you know, we're going through our life cycle and really starting at menarche, our brain and our ovaries are figuring out their dance. And then, you know, around 10 years, that's Dr. Geraldine Pryor's research. She says it takes about 10 years for that maturation process to occur, brain and ovaries. Now they've got, they know the dance now. And anybody who's like tried to learn ballroom dancing or any kind of dancing really knows that it takes time to establish that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as we go through our life cycle, you know, starting about age 25, our DHEA declines. That's an adrenal hormone. It's also an anti-aging hormone. It's why some experts believe that we actually have programmed cell death, and it begins with the decline of DHEA. And sadly, that begins about 25. And then as we enter into 35, that's when some women will stop ovulating as regularly, or once you ovulate, what's left behind is the corpus luteum. Every woman wants to ovulate during their reproductive years because that's the only way you get progesterone. And progesterone is fantastic and making you feel chilled out and calm, connecting to your community. It's a wonderful hormone. And if you don't ovulate, you're going to have PMS. You're going to have painful, heavy periods. You're going to cry and blow up. And like, it is going to feel like the world hates you and your body hates you. And really, that's just, we got to get progesterone dialed in. So once we go into our 40s, you know, around, so we're already starting that perimenopausal phase in that later half of our 30s. And then we'll see it just continues its decline in terms of hormone production as we lead into our 40s. Now, women often get told that like, oh, it's your estrogen and this is all about estrogen. But really the perimenopausal symptoms are because of the touch and go. I don't know if you guys have stick shift where you reside in the world.
We do.
I'm like, do people even do that anymore? Did I just date myself? That's how I learned to drive. And if anybody ever has been with someone learning to drive a stick shift, you know, it's like that, and you're like, what is happening? That's kind of what's happening with the ovaries and the brain, is they're trying to fire and then they're not. And like, and it just becomes a little bit of hormonal chaos. And what most women need in that time is actually progesterone. And it isn't that estrogen is a big troublemaker. It's that estrogen is a diva who has just been given a full stage and never been challenged. So basically you put Beyonce on stage and then you need to bring Tina Turner in. Like, you got to bring someone else that's going to like be like, okay, diva, let's like make sure we got some balance here. And then, you know, as we make that transition, you know, the hot flashes that are coming on, that's because, you know, your ovaries are trying, estrogen's peaking and it's dropping. We're having hot flashes and night sweats. And as we enter into menopause, which is, you know, you have to go 12 months with no period to receive the diagnosis of menopause. And once that day comes and goes, you are now postmenopausal. And it's in postmenopause that our ovaries are no longer working. So people will like hear that, you know, people say adrenal fatigue and like, that's not correct. Your adrenals never quit, but your ovaries do quit and they're supposed to. And this is design. And this is where sometimes women get the message in society that like, well, now you have no value. And no, your value is the wisdom that you are now going to distill to the future generations. These women are such a valuable part of our society, but it can be a bit of a delicate time to make that transition. Now, we used to think that the only way that we got any estrogen or any of our hormones was from our ovaries. Then we came to understand, well, our fat cells actually make these hormones, and our adrenals make DHEA still, which gets converted into testosterone and estrogen. So once we go into menopause, this is where women who are like, well, I'm perimenopause and menopausal. Can your book help me at all? You still have a gut. You still have a liver, you still have adrenals, you still have a thyroid, you still have a sex drive. Like, yes, and all of that is in my book. And your adrenal and your thyroid health becomes even more important, as does insulin and blood sugar regulation. And as you move into menopause and those ovaries quit, we are now understanding that there's a lot more cells that are making hormones. So like your bones are making stress hormones and they're making estrogen as well. And, you know, your brain cells, these other cells may very well be making hormones. And so all of this is to say is that it's very exciting that there's a whole lot we don't know and we're still learning and exploring about the human body. But as you make that transition into menopause, some women do find themselves. So what I will say about perimenopause, it's not uncommon to see a doctor say, let me just give you birth control and that'll shut all of that down. And it can help some women, but there's some problems in that. One being, this is a medication that was designed for a young, healthy, reproductively viable female. It wasn't actually designed for you. And where you're at is a different place in your life cycle. And secondly, it's a really short-sighted approach to a very complex hormonal period of a woman's life. And that progestin won't give you the benefits of progesterone. So women in perimenopause, they may stop sleeping, they may have more anxiety, and that's because they don't have that natural progesterone stimulating the GABA receptor in their brain. And progestin can't do that. Progestin won't do that. In addition, we're starting to see some research coming out that shows that your natural hormones, your estrogen, your progesterone, are incredibly protective against dementia and help with neuroplasticity, your ability to learn new things. What we don't have information on is what happens when you're on that synthetic stuff. Like, we don't actually know how that impacts the brain. So, you know, I could keep going. We could actually do an entire podcast just on perimenopause and menopause, but I hope that serves your audience.
No, I love it. I just wanted to cover off the life cycle for me to have an understanding as well. I'm very, very grateful for all your time and wisdom today. Before we wrap it up, I would love to just explore some tips or solutions for people that are either on the pill or not on the pill. And what do you recommend as, I guess, your recipe for life, some of your ingredients that sort of non-negotiable?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the reality is that everything your mama told you that you didn't want to do as a child is exactly what it takes to be healthy and to live a full and vibrant life. And it's just not the sexy stuff. There's not going to be this groundbreaking piece of research that comes out and then says, oh, guess what? You never needed to sleep. Like, that was a myth. No, like and it's what I call the laws of nature, right? Like, these are just the laws of nature. They're the non-negotiables. We all have to drink water. We all have to move our body. We need to get sleep and not just like get in bed, but you need to have really restful sleep, which, you know, in our modern society likely includes wearing amber glasses, moderating your electronic use at night so that you can get that melatonin up. Interestingly, you know, melatonin and cortisol oppose each other. So if you want to drop stress hormones, you want to drop your stress, wear amber glasses at night, drop your, you know, stress hormones and get your melatonin up, which is, melatonin helps with sleep, but it's incredibly protective against cancers and protective of the ovaries. So it's one of those little secret sauces of life to staying healthy and avoiding chronic disease. And then of course, you know, diet is so important. It's not just about, like, you know, I've been in the, you know, health and wellness arena for over two decades now. And, you know, there's just so much misinformation that comes out all the time. And it's like, as humans, we want to vilify things. We want to be like, fat is bad. No, fat is amazing. No, grains are bad. No, grains are amazing. And in reality, you need to be viewing everything through the lens of what is true for me and what is true for me right now. Because our diet is never meant to stay static. Like, you will be in healing phases, you will need to make changes, but there are some tried and true ingredients to this. And one is, you need to eat vegetables, high quality vegetables as often as possible, being able to choose organic. If you're on birth control right now, you need to be eating cruciferous vegetables. And if you are in college or you're like, I don't have access to that, buy some sprout seeds. So buy some broccoli seeds, buy some kale seeds and sprout those. It's actually a really economical way to get the benefits of cruciferous vegetables. And they're actually better than broccoli. Like, they're better than the whole plant. plant to eat those sprouts. So that's, you know, one area you want to focus on is getting plenty of fiber, plenty of nutrients through the variety of plants that you can consume in your diet. Now, in addition, you need high quality protein. And that, if you are following a vegan or vegetarian diet, you really need to look at your protein sources, because without amino acids, your liver cannot detoxify. And I see people who are like, I'm going to do a detox, and so I'm just going to go on like nothing but juice. And I'm like, well, but you need amino acids. That's actually how your liver runs its detox pathways. Amino acids have to be a part of that. Plus, you know, protein is so important. It's how we build other proteins that are body and our body itself. If you're losing hair, you need to look at your protein status. If you want to have strong hair and nails and beautiful skin, your protein is going to be really important. And then, of course, quality fats. Look, if it was made by a chemist who's brilliant, doesn't mean that your body is going to receive it as brilliant. So if it's made by a chemist, understand that like your body hasn't evolved to actually understand completely what that is. And the science hasn't been done to totally understand what happens with that. So you can't ever go wrong really in choosing whole foods, the less processed it is, and respecting what your body says as you're eating it. So maybe I'm sitting here saying broccoli is great and you're like, but not for me. Maybe you have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and you have some stuff you need to work on. Then just because I'm an expert in this arena saying this doesn't mean I'm an expert on your body. You're the expert on your body and you have to respect that. So diet is absolutely essential while we're on hormonal birth control, or if we just want to have awesome hormones so that we run our detox pathways by supporting our body and fueling it and giving it what it needs. But in addition to that, keeping inflammation low, feeding that microbiome, and being able to replenish the nutrients that we're losing while being on hormonal birth control. And then, of course, if you know that you're on a medication that may alter your stress response, then you definitely want to be keeping tabs on your stress. So whether it's meditation, movement, mindfulness, journaling, playing with your kids, whatever it is that brings you joy and helps you decompress, you want to be engaging in that on a daily, as a daily health practice. And so I know that, you know, there's some people that are like, well, what you're saying isn't new. And like, we're looking for, you know, information that's like totally new and compelling in terms of what we need to do to be healthy. And it's like, but you know what? It's always going to come back to the basics first, because if you don't lay the foundation, then you can chase it down with all the fancy supplements you want or even medications. But the reality is that you can't out-supplement a poor diet and lifestyle. And that should feel empowering, because this is what you can do every single day to move the needle. You know, you get to choose, move closer to health or closer to disease. And that's so incredible that you have that much power and that you're able to do that. So certainly the last thing I would say is that every single woman, if she wants to have awesome hormones, needs to make sure that she has great blood sugar regulation. And so whether that, you know, and that varies. Some women do great on keto. Some women do great with intermittent fasting. Some women do great eating every 3 hours. And it's really about where you're at, what is true for you, and making sure that you meet your body's needs. Because if your blood sugar is going up and down, your adrenal glands are going to follow, your stress response is going to follow, and your body's going to say, environment's not safe, reproductive health, shut it down, because we really need to focus on survival.
I love it. Love you, Jolene. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been a wonderful adventure for me. I've learned so much, and I cannot wait to share this with everybody. So thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon or evening, wherever you are in the world at the moment.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a great conversation. I really appreciate all the work you're doing in this world to help people have that gift of health.
And to find out more about Jolene, look for her book, Beyond the Pill, by Dr. Jolene Brighton. Thank you so much.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.